Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
Funny movie, Parental Guidance. Came out a couple years. Not a lot of people have saw it, but it was rated PG. It was hilarious. It's really about... Billy Crystal and Bette Midler play a set of grandparents who have to go and watch their grandkids for a week. And of course, their children are parenting much different than the way that they were brought up and raised. And so you see the clashes of the two styles, and you saw a little portion of it right there. And kind of what's reflected in that scene is, you know, as parents, we want to protect our kids from pain. We want to protect our kids from the harsh realities of life. And so we kind of have this nurturing, protecting sort of sense about us, but sometimes it kind of goes awry. Sometimes it goes to places that it shouldn't, or is actually detrimental to their learning, understanding how life works. And, you know, as parents, there are some rules and laws of life that we know we can't change, and so we teach our kids accordingly. For instance, gravity. You have no control over gravity unless you move to the moon or live underwater. You can't control it. So eventually you teach kids, don't go near the stairs. Be scared of heights. We're teaching that to the kids because if they don't, it's going to come back to bite them really hard later, right? But sometimes as parents, we take other laws of life and we try to mitigate them or interrupt the natural order of things only to our child's own detriment. And one of those, as we saw in that clip, is... it comes out to be an issue of, scientists call it cause and effect. The Bible calls it the law of sowing and reaping, that your actions have consequences. And you see this in Galatians chapter 6, verse 7 and 10. It says, do not be deceived. God can't be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. Whoever sows to please their flesh, from the flesh will reap destruction. Whoever sows to please the Spirit, from that Spirit will reap eternal life. So let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest of righteousness if we don't give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially those who belong to the family of believers. And what he's telling us here basically is stuff that eventually we learn. If you play with fire, you're going to get burned. If you overspend, you're going to find yourself in debt. If you eat less and exercise more, you'll lose weight. Those are just things. It's cause and effect. There's a direct corollary to those things. If you love God now, you have a relationship with him you can enjoy for all eternity. You have choices that you get to make all along. And if you don't understand this law of cause and effect, or law of sowing and reaping, what will happen is you'll have children who grow up always thinking that people are mean and unfair. They'll think that you're mean and unfair. They'll think that life is mean and unfair, and eventually they'll think that God is mean and unfair because they don't understand the law of sowing and reaping. They don't understand that there's a direct corollary between their actions and what happens and how they're treated. Kind of what I mean by that is sowing and reaping is no respecter of persons. You will reap what you sow. It doesn't say, oh, well, I know you didn't mean to, so this is not going to happen. If you drive recklessly, eventually you're going to get in a wreck, right? It doesn't matter if you were a good person or a kind person or a sweet person. Karma would tell you, well, if you're a nice person, a good person, then everything good will come back on you. No, if you reap reckless driving, eventually you're going to get in a wreck. There's a direct corollary there. And what happens, this whole series is about helping your children put together the pieces of life. And when you don't teach this law, they go through life wondering why it is that people are being mean to them. Why is my teacher always mean to me? I don't think she likes me very much. No, you are reaping what you sowed. You're not obeying the rules of the classroom. You're not studying. It's not that the teacher doesn't like you. It's that you're reaping the consequences of your behavior. And like, no, I think she just doesn't like me. And then you move on later in life. You'll think to yourself, well, she's just difficult to get along with. I don't see how anybody could be in a marriage with her. Well, no, you're reaping the consequences of destructive relationships and destructive relationship patterns. Nobody wants to be my friend. People are just mean to me at school. Well, if you're not being a friend and you're not being kind, you're not treating people with love and care, nobody's going to be your friend. It's not that they just arbitrarily singled you out. It's a law of sowing and reaping. And as parents, we've got to teach this to our children because if they don't learn it now, it's only going to become a more and more painful message later on. As parents, we so often want to sort of interrupt some of the natural cycles of sowing and reaping. And what God is saying is, God can't be mocked. You will reap what you sow. It's as if he's saying, listen, you can you can mock baseball by making a mockery of the game where everybody gets on base. And that's kind of what Billy Crystal is getting at in there. If you know Billy Crystal in real life, he loves baseball. And in the movie, he plays the part of a sportscaster who's a baseball announcer. And so he's so excited to go watch his kids play. And he gets there, and they're making a mockery of the sport that he loved. And that's why he kind of goes ballistic on this whole thing. And it's like, listen, you can make a mockery of baseball where no matter how hard you play, no matter how much effort you put forth, you kind of miss part of the scenes. If you notice, there was kids over in the dugout, they're basically playing board games and playing on their iPad during the game because they're so disinterested and so checked out that they're tuned into this. And the idea is, listen, it doesn't matter what effort you put forth, everybody wins. Everybody gets the same thing. There was a little controversy going on around my house because the year that I coached my son's soccer team, they didn't win a single game at all. And the season came around towards the end, and there was a question, like, are we going to get trophies? No. And you thought that literally, like, I was the worst parent in the world for denying trophies. And there were even some parents who were interested, and I'm like, what are we saying about a trophy if you lose every single game and you get a trophy? Does it even matter if you get a trophy, if you just get a trophy for barely showing up? And half the kids didn't even show up for practice. So we're going to give a kid a trophy for putting forth almost no effort whatsoever in a game and losing every game? I don't know. Maybe I'm a horrible parent. Maybe I come from a different, you know, day and time. I couldn't do it. I mean, the law of sowing and reaping just doesn't allow for that. And what God is saying, listen, you may make a mockery of baseball, but you're not going to make a mockery of life. That you will reap what you sow. What you do is going to come back to you. And it's going to come back and bite you. And there's no way that you can get around this. And there's something within us, though, that thinks that we can beat the system. There's something within us that thinks to yourself, well, I got it figured out. I'm working it out so the consequences aren't going to come back and get me. And it's kind of like, listen, all that whole thing about reaping and sowing and dealing with consequences, it's because most people's intelligence is down here and I'm up here. I've figured things out. I know a little bit more. Most people's income level is down here, but I can buy my way out of this whole thing. Most people, they don't know God, but God's like my out clause in everything. And so I just give a little bit more money, serve a little bit more, and he'll kind of like make up for everything that I'm doing wrong. A lot of people right now, they get caught because they're stupid. They're stupid criminals. But you see, the government has trained me how to cover my tracks. And so I can get away with stuff because I can cover up everything. And so we think to ourselves, we can beat the system. It says, no. You can't beat the system. I will not be mocked. This is a rule. This is a law of life. And you're not getting around it. You can't outsmart it. And if you deny this, you're going to suffer the consequences. And we got to teach this to our kids. Back in the 60s, when the Peter Pan movie came out, there were kids who did not believe in the law of gravity. They thought they could defy the law of gravity just like Peter Pan. When they got in their pajamas at night, they could jump out of second-story windows and they could fly like Peter Pan. And of course, gravity is no respecter of persons, and gravity is not going to give them a hall pass just because they didn't understand the law. And it was very tragic, and many kids died and were seriously injured in the process of it. And what's happening is that we will do the same thing to our children if we don't teach them the law of sowing and reaping. If we don't teach them there's a connection between the choices they make and the consequences they're dealing with. We have to understand that our choices in life play a part in determining our outcomes in life. Our choices in life play a part in determining our outcomes in life. We're not a constant victim the whole way through life. Life is not a passive game where we just kind of flow through and things happen to us. No, you get to choose the path that you take. You get to choose the relationships you pursue. You get to choose how you respond to each thing that comes into your life. If you go very back in the very beginning, when God first created this whole thing, he set the whole thing in order. You go back to Genesis chapter 2, verse 15, and it says, he placed the man there in the garden, and it says, you are free to eat of any plant that you want, but don't eat of this one right here. So listen, you're free to choose to do whatever you want to do. You can eat of any plant you want, but I'm going to ask you. I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to make you. I'm not going to force you. I mean, there's a part of me that like wants God to like put a barbed wire fence over. There's a part of me that wishes God had taken that tree of the knowledge of good and evil and like put it over on the top of Mount Doom, so like, you know, Frodo would have to, you know, traverse the whole expanse of Middle Earth just to get there to finally find it, you know what I mean? But that's not what God does. He puts it right there, right in their midst, and says, you have a choice. You have a choice to make, and you're free to do whatever you want. And see, when we read that God says you're free to do whatever you want, we always think to ourselves that a life with God is going to limit our freedom. right? Because there's all those rules that they put on you when you go to church. And I just don't know if I want to live by all those rules. But you see, God's rules are designed to give you maximum freedom. Maximum freedom. Think about you as a parent. When you put rules in place for a child, you say, listen, you need to do your homework. You need to study hard. You need to get good grades. Now, is it because you want to limit the social interactions and opportunities for your child? Is it because you're trying to make their life more difficult? Or are you looking at their life and saying, you know, if you get good grades and you stay out of trouble, when you turn 18, you will have the freedom to choose from far more options than you will if you make bad choices and have bad grades. Isn't that why, as a parent, we try to push them towards making wise choices and getting good grades? Because you want to be able to look at your kid and say, listen, any branch of the military you want to go into, you can go into. You want to be an officer? Go be an officer. You want to enlist? Go enlist. You want to go to a trade school? I want you to be able to go to a trade school. You want to go to college? I want you to be able to get into any college you want. But you're only able to do that if you work hard, you stay in school, and you say no to drugs, and you don't hang with the wrong crowd, and you say, you know, keep your criminal record free. If you do all those things, you will have the maximum freedom when you get to that point. Isn't that what we're doing as parents? And God's looking at you and saying, listen, I want you to have the freedom to be able to say no to what you want to say no to and say yes to what you want to say yes to. We look about pornography. Why does God not want you to do pornography? Because he wants you to have the freedom to think about whatever you want to think about and not be forced to only think about that or to compare things to that. He wants to give you the freedom not be addicted to things. That's why he says, just stay away from this, that stuff. He wants you to have the freedom to be able to control your emotions. He wants you to have the freedom to be able to have enjoyment in your relationships. And so often we make choices that are destructive. And God says, listen, I don't want you to make those destructive choices. It's gonna limit your options. And if you don't learn how to play nice with people, it's going to limit your marriage opportunities down the road. Are you gonna be more free? Remember when I worked in Birmingham at a crisis pregnancy center, so often we would see students come in, young ladies, who had gotten pregnant and they're on scholarship. And, you know, they had made choices, moral choices. And this isn't a Jesus thing or a non-Jesus thing. It just, you know, if you make those choices and have relationships while you're on soccer scholarship, it's going to limit your ability to be on scholarship. And they'd have a choice to make because they didn't have the freedom to continue their school and do whatever they wanted. They had a choice to make. And so we'd have to talk with them and counsel them through that choice. And it's going to limit your options down the road. But you're free to choose whatever you want, God says. And my hope, my desire is that you would choose me, that you would choose a relationship with me and choose to walk in the path I want you to walk, because it'll lead you maximum freedom. And if you look at it, and this happens, this starts in Genesis and it goes throughout the scripture. God says, you are free to choose, and the direction that you choose will determine the course of your life. He says to them in Deuteronomy chapter 30, this is the younger generation, the older generation that came out of Egypt, went through the whole Moses, Exodus, the Red Sea. That generation chose to not follow after God, and so they died in the wilderness. And the next generation comes up. He says, all right, now you guys get a choice. You get to choose your own destiny. Your destiny's not hampered or determined by the choice of your parents. You get to choose. And he says to them, today I give you the choice between life and death, between blessings and curses. Now call upon heaven and earth as witness to the choice that you make. And he says, oh, I just hope that you choose life so that your descendants might also do the same. He says, I want you to choose the right thing. You see, others would say, it doesn't matter what choice you make in life because all roads lead to the same place. Doesn't matter what choice you make in life, all roads lead to the same place. And you think about that, it seems like as if there's great freedom in that, but really there's no freedom of choice in that, is there? It's like Henry Ford came out when he came out with the Model T. He said it comes in every color you want as long as that color is black. And really, it's no choice. It's like taking 25 Snickers candies and putting each of them in a different colored Easter egg. And you say, all right, son, you get to choose which candy you want. Pick whatever egg color you want. Well, they could pick red, blue, yellow, green, purple, chartreuse, whatever it might be. But guess what? You've already determined the outcome for them, right? Their choices have no consequence on the outcomes that they get. But a life principle that we see over and over in Scripture is this, is that the most powerful tool you have to shaping your future is the choices you make. There's a lot of unknowns in life. There's a lot of things that you can't control. A lot of things that are far beyond what you can understand. A lot of things that are mysterious and unpredictable. But what we do know is that the material from which your future will be created is from the choices you make today. The material from which your future is made is from the choices you make today. Whether or not you face life as a married person is based on the choice that you make, right? whether or not you have the freedom to live wherever you want depends on whether or not you chose to be in the Navy, right? You gave up that freedom, and that was a choice that you made. We're not in the draft nowadays. You made that choice, and you may complain about it, be frustrated about it, but listen, where you're at today is in large part due to the choices that you made and the direction that you pursued. I think I said at Easter, I said that, you know, so much of your life is determined by the choices you make and the relationship you pursue. And listen, I know a lot of things happen that are beyond your control. And I remember when I was going through a difficult time, a pastor friend of mine came to me and said, listen, Steve, you're not the first person to go through something like this. And there's a lot of other people who have gone through the same thing that you've gone through. And they're handling a lot better than you're handling it right now. So don't sit there and say, I'm a victim. It wasn't me. I didn't do this. It wasn't my fault. Because you are responsible for the choices you make in the response to what has happened to you. You are still in control of the destiny and where you go from here. There's a lot of people who have been through the same thing that you've been through, but you get to choose. You have the power to choose your destiny and the direction you go. And your future, the material that your future is made of, depends heavily upon the decisions and the choices that you make. And for some of you, it's sometimes in life, there are very crucial decisions that you make. I think Dr. Phil said in one of his books that there's 10 decisions you'll make in life, which basically make a lot of other decisions for you down the road. And that, you know, things about where you live, what career you choose, who you choose to marry, a lot of those kind of things. And those are decisions you get to make. And that's part of how God has created and designed you. So one pastor once said, the most spiritual decision and the most spiritual act you'll ever do is the power to choose. It's who we are as spiritual beings. We get to choose the outcomes of our life. And as parents, what we need to instill in our children is the ability to make decisions. We need to instill in our children the ability to make wise decisions. You see, it's very tempting as a parent, because I want to give them the maximum freedom and the best experience in life, it's very tempting for me to want to control their life. We call that a helicopter parent. We talked about that, I think, last year. We were talking about parenting series. We're basically the helicopter parent is one who, like, hovers over their child and controls every outcome, protects them from every consequence, and makes sure that, you know, nothing bad happens to their child. There was a Toyota commercial a couple years ago touting the benefits of this new safe Toyota that come out with, and says, if you're this kind of parent, it shows this little kid going out to play soccer. I think he's going to play tennis, and he's got, like, full body armor on, right? It's because we're trying to protect our child. And we want to control our child and make sure that, you know, they're only doing exactly what we want to do so nothing bad happens. So listen, it says if you control your child, you are not leading them to understand the law of sowing and reaping, because they need to understand that they have the power to choose. Now what you do instead as a parent is what you do is you give them choices. And the goal of parents, not to control a child, give them what they want to do, but to help them understand how to make a wise choice. They need to be able to answer this question for themselves. What will happen if I do this? What will happen if I do this? And the goal is to get them to answer that question without having done it, right? I don't know if everyone, but at least it was true for me and the kids I ran with. We all put something in an electric socket just to see what it did, right? You did. And it's funny, I did it when I was a kid, and I even did it again when I was in college. I was sitting in there, I was in this really boring meeting, and there was a floor outlet. And I was wondering which is the neutral and which is the hot. I guessed wrong. I figured I had a 50-50 shot. Sure enough, I took my pocket knife, stuck it right down in the middle of this meeting. Poof, like this big, you know, spark and like smoke cloud rose up and everybody knew what I'd done. So you want them to be able to think, what will happen if I do this? Now, as a parent, what you do is, it's like this. If you sow destructive behavior, you're going to reap pain. If you sow positive behavior, you'll reap the benefits of doing that. And the task of a parent is to give the proper amount of freedom and manage the consequences of their behavior. Give them the proper amount of freedom for their age and manage the consequences of their behavior. I said when we were doing the child dedication last week, I gave this definition. I give it over and over and over again. Sometimes I say it so fast because I've memorized it. It's discipline is the artificial application and amplification. In other words, I am artificially creating consequences for behavior. I am trying to teach them the law of sowing and reaping, okay, by artificially giving them reaping consequences, or artificially stepping things in, okay? So I artificially do that, and I amplify it. I make it far worse than it naturally would be, okay? Why? Because discipline is the artificial application and amplification of the consequences of wrongdoing. before the natural consequences of wrongdoing are big enough to scar them for life. I want to create consequences, and this plays out like this. We have a rule in our house. There are some things as a parent I don't understand. There's just some things that you just look at and you pull your hair out and you go, how? We've got 9 feet of space between the tub and the door. 6 feet of that is covered in bath rug, okay? And it is the 6 feet closest to the tub. So you have 6 feet of dry off runway, okay, before you get to the last 3 feet of the bathroom, okay? Yet somehow, it's always wet after the kids take a shower. And it's not like as if I put the towels beyond that reach. No. It's the first thing you come to in the first 2 feet out of the shower. And I have a rule. You dry off on the bath mat. Okay, it's a rule. Dry off the mat. And if you don't, it's a 24-hour screen freeze. Basically, no iPad, no TV, no anything with a screen on it, no more. Okay? That's pretty harsh. Okay? But for whatever reason, I'm thinking I need to step it up. Well, that was until this past week. One of the kids did not dry off and let the puddle. And it just so happened that the most frequent instigator was not the one who did it that day, but he came running into the bathroom, whoop, bam, right down on his tailbone. Not a good moment for him. But a glorious one for us parents. We have a saying in our home. It's called natural consequences, baby. You see, those natural consequences hurt real bad. As a matter of fact, if I gave him a choice between getting cracked on the tailbone like that or losing screen for 24 hours, which of your kids would choose getting cracked on the hip bone like that? I'm not talking a little spank like some of y'all spank. I'm talking a crack on the hip bone where it hurts to sit down for a couple days. I didn't do it. Gravity and the loss of friction did it, okay? Those are natural laws. Those with natural consequences. And if my kids don't learn other natural laws like sowing and reaping, they'll be in a world of hurt. And it's so tempting as a parent to want to jump in and save them from the consequences. I read this quote. I love it. I got to pass it on to you. Suffering is inevitable in life. Make sure it happens at home. I think I want to put that like right above our kitchen, you know, right there on the wall, you know. So, you know, God bless this home. You know, something, you know, like some of y'all have, like, you know, God bless this home, or home is where the heart is. I want mine to say, suffering is inevitable. It's going to happen here. It's just because they got to have the consequences. You see, if you, as a parent, you're so tempted to rush in and bail them out from the consequences of their behavior. You're so tempted because you hate seeing your kids hurt, right? They're so helpless. They're so cute. They're just, I don't want to see them hurt. But if you rush in and bail them out when they're 8 years old and they drop their ice cream cone on the ground, okay? This happened to every one of my kids. When you get an ice cream cone, you hold it upright. And I can tell you where it happened for each of the kids. You hold it upright. And sure enough, they're sitting, you know, splat. What's the first thing they say? I have another one. And your heart as a parent, you're sitting there, you're looking at the other kids, everybody else around you, all got your ice creams, they're sitting there with one on the ground. Some of you parents will pick it up, shave it off, eat that one, and give them yours. No. Some of you parents, because you'd say, well, I'm not that cheap. Some of you parents will just buy them a new one, right? Yeah, you go, I can't have little Timmy, you buy him a new one. You bail him out when he's 8 years old, when he's 18 years old, and now he doesn't know how to take care of a car, and he wrecks it. The cost to bail him out went from $5 to $5,000. You know, each one of my kids, I said they've each one have dropped an ice cream cone once, and they don't forget it because they had to sit there and watch everybody else in the family eat ice cream, and no, I didn't give them a bite of mine. And no, they couldn't get a bite of their brothers or the sisters. And it's not because I'm a cruel parent. It's not because I'm a cruel parent. Remember, if you don't understand the law of sowing and reaping, you will grow up thinking that your parents are cruel, that people are cruel, that your spouse is cruel, that your kids are cruel, that God is cruel. but it's not. It's just a law of life. You will reap what you sow. And as parents, if you step in and try to break that law for your kids, you'll be bailing them out for the rest of their life. And eventually what will happen? You won't be able to throw money at the problem anymore. It'll be beyond what finances can control. You know, for everything else, there's MasterCard, right? But at some point, MasterCard will not cover a damaged, broken relationship or an addiction that they have a hard time recovering from. You can't throw enough money at that problem. Because they have to learn when they're young that you will reap what you sow. And if they don't learn it when they're young, they'll still be dealing it when they're adults. And how many of us in here are still trying to learn this principle of reaping and sowing? How many of us right now are living with the consequences of choices we made because we thought we could beat the system, because we didn't learn that our actions have consequences, because we didn't realize that our future is made from the material of the choices that we made back then? And so often we want to go back and say, if only I knew then what I know now. Here's the deal. You knew, you just ignored it. We knew, we just ignored it. And we can't lead our children down the same path. Here's the thing, change is painful. All change is painful. I hate any kind of change. When I got married, I had to change my wardrobe. There were certain outfits I was wearing that she just looked at and she's like, "You're gonna wear that?" And I had a choice: do I want her or do I want the outfit? And so made a change. I told y'all the Rebeccaization of my house has been well documented. I had a pool table in my living room. It was painful to watch that baby go. And I had to let it go quick, so I lost money on it. And it was painful to watch it go. All change is painful. Okay, but here's the thing. As parents, you need to make the consequence of not changing more painful than the change itself. How do I set the level of discipline? You'll know the level of discipline is right when it changes the behavior. If it's not changing the behavior, the consequence and the discipline is not more painful, okay, than the painful pain of change. And that's why when you give in, because it's so tempting to want to give in on the consequence, but when you give in on the consequence, you're the weak spot. Pressure will always seek the weak spot to release. And when there's an issue of change, you've got to have the consequence be more painful than staying the same. Or basically, listen, I know that doing homework is not fun. I know doing chores is not fun. And if there's no consequence for not doing your chores and not doing your homework, guess what? You'll never do your homework and never do your chores. But I've got to put painful consequences in place where you will choose the right path. Where you will choose the right path. See, as parents, we've got to go from scheduling our child's homework time to saying, here's the deal. You need to get your homework done, and when your homework's done, you can go play. That's it. When your chores are done, you can go play. I don't care if it takes you 5 minutes. I don't care if it takes you an hour. I don't care if it takes you all night. But you have a choice. You can dilly-dally up in your room and not get your work done and watch everybody else outside from the window playing, or you can choose to do your work now so you can play later. You can choose to do your term paper on Monday, or you can wait till it's due the following Monday, and on Sunday when we're all out at the beach and having fun, you'll be at home, and we'll say bye-bye. We'll go enjoy the beach, and we'll come back, and you'll watch us washing off the sand and hear about the great day we had, and you won't get to go. You get to choose. And when you teach them to choose, you're teaching them about life. As a church, this all comes around full circle for me, because I know one day I'll have to give an account for how we went as a church, and we're in a great place right now. And we're in a situation right now where this next year is going to be very painful, all the changes that are coming on, and doing two campuses. This service is probably going to feel the pain more than any other, because this will become a video campus. And I've already heard some say, I don't like that. That's going to be different. That's going to be weird. I don't know if I'm like, it's going to be painful making that change and making that transition. But here's the deal. We have two choices at this point. Either we make this change, as painful as it's going to be, or someday we look at God and say, God, I know there were 70 center people in our city that didn't know you, but I didn't want to make a change because that was going to be too painful. And there's a parable that Jesus tells about when we don't do what we need to do in that moment. He says, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth over the regret that you have for not making the decision that honors God and leads to building his kingdom. There'll be great pain. There'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And I can't lead you down to church to that point. I have to be able to look at myself and say, what will happen if we do this? What will happen if we don't do this? And I see that pain ahead, and I say, that pain is worse than the pain that we're going to experience this next year. So we're going to do this. Why? Because I know that this pain is something I don't want you to experience. And I know that because I've been a part of that kind of church. And the church I was at in Florida at one point was the largest church in our county. By the way, the county we were in was the largest county in the state of Florida. It was down in West Palm Beach area. Very large county, very wealthy, well-to-do. The facility at this church was amazing. We had about a 25,000, 30,000 square foot building. The sanctuary could seat 400. You could knock out the back wall, return it to its original glory, and seat about 700, 750. It had innovations that are well before its time, long before projectors were in churches. This thing had the remote control screen that came down. Man, I wish I had something like that. Across the street, because they own land across the street as well, they had a lit softball diamond. You could go out there, church, you know, you could have your own church softball league, flip on the lights. You had literally stadium lights. Now, I'm not just talking about like little, you know, spotlight somewhere. I'm talking the full, big, real deal rack lights going all down each side. Beyond that, there was a rec center. There was a pavilion. There was their own putt-putt course. There was a prayer garden, all these facilities. It was amazing. And I looked out when I first got there. I saw this field where the land had been cleared and everything had been kind of like graded. And I was like, see, the only thing this church doesn't have is a gym. And it almost looked like that'd be the perfect spot for it. And the guy next to me says, wow. And I said, what? He says, well, that's actually where a gym was originally supposed to be. And I said, well, what happened? They said, well, Peter Lord was the pastor of this church back then. I don't know if you all have ever heard of Peter Lord. He's really well known down in Florida. He became an evangelist, kind of like a Billy Graham kind of evangelist. And he was the one who led that church to grow and build all those buildings. And he could see that the next thing that they needed to do to continue to reach their area was to build this gymnasium. And this is back in the 60s, okay? So just think about our country, the climate of the 60s. And the words, it's funny, the wording has, everybody in the church knows the wording. And it's one of those subtle, it's a, I don't know what they call it, but it's basically, it's a racial slur, but they use a different word instead of, because the racial just comes out. When you say a racial term, it makes you sound evil, bad, wrong. So we'll just say, here's their answer. They didn't want the kind of riffraff a gym would bring in. Which is, of course, code for we're racist and we don't want to have anybody from a different race coming here. And so he fought the church for 2 years about building this gym to be able to reach the community. And the church over and over again over those 2 years said, no, we don't want the kind of riffraff that a gym would bring in. So we said, okay. He moved. He went up to Merritt Island, amazing church up there. And you look at the growth pattern of this church, up, 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 up. We don't want the kind of riffraff. And literally, you just see the graph go down with little blips. When I got there, the church ran 40 people in that kind of a facility. And it's because God said, you don't want to follow after me, and you don't have a heart for the people I have a heart for, then I'm going to go somewhere else. And it was painful to be a part of a church in which their glory years were behind them. It didn't look like as if they were ever going to come back. And having pastored that church, I don't want to be a part of that again. And I don't want to lead the generation that says, we don't want to worry about the rest of the 70% because we got a good thing going over here on our side of town. No, we have to be willing to go and to go and to go and follow God's heart. Because the pain of not going is going to be greater than the pain that we'll experience by the change that's ahead. And so we're going. Because we understand the law of sowing and reaping. And here's the thing, you can leverage this principle for your benefit, or it can come back to bite you. And we'll talk more about that next week when we get into the Exodus. But God says, I will bless you for following after me, and you will reap far more than what you invested. But you also see that the pain of not doing what God asked us to do is far more painful than we ever could imagine. And that's kind of what we'll get into next week. So as we kind of conclude out here, my question for you is simply this. As a parent, am I interrupting the law of sowing and reaping in my kid's life? Am I stepping in and preventing natural consequences from happening in a way in which I should allow them under my care and a concern in my provision? As a parent, what problems are my kids' problems, and how do I need to help them face consequences for those problems? What is the right amount of consequences to get them to change their behavior? Am I controlling my children, or am I giving them the freedom to choose and helping them understand there's a connection between the choices that they make and the consequences in the life that they experience? Then lastly, for you and for me, this is the harder part. It's easy when we're talking about the kids. The real deal, though, is what choices are you making right now that you're going to regret later? God says, you can't mock me. You can't sit there and act like you're going to get away with this. Number says, be sure your sin will find you out. What is it in your life right now that you are sowing that you don't think you're going to reap the consequences of? And God says, you're fooling yourself. But you're not going to fool me. And then that kind of leads to the next question is, what things do I need to begin sowing now so I can reap the benefits of the change later? Because the stuff doesn't happen overnight, but it will come out. And that's kind of what we're going to get into next week. Will you join with me as we close? Father, as we come here this morning, so many of us have a laundry list of regretful choices that we've made. And so we're dealing with those consequences right now. And we just so desperately want to turn to others who might be facing that same decision and say, don't go there. May this message be the wake-up call that someone here this morning needs. As parents, Lord, help us parent in such a way that it reflects the laws of how you've created things. And Father, may we embrace life as it has been created for us. Embrace the choices that we get to make. May we truly accept, Father, that it is my choice how to respond. And I have a hand in determining my future, both here in this life and for all eternity. And in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.